Welcome to the Not Your Mama's Autism podcast. I'm Lola Dada Ali. Our last episode involved a frank discussion with a purpose-driven CEO who provides rich context as to why diversity, inclusion, and accessibility are important to him. In this episode, we speak with the Pixar director of an animated film that proves to be much more than art, but a way that helped him look into himself, his familial relationships, and see the importance of representation in media. The 2019 animated film Float is 7 minutes of thought provocation wrapped up in a story about a father and his son. Bobby Rubio is the writer-director and is currently a story artist at Pixar, and is the creator of independent comics like Alcatraz High, Foregun Conclusion, and Neighborhood Legend. Bobby's real-life relationship with his son, Alex, who is on the autism spectrum, is the inspiration behind his short. Earlier this year, we had a great conversation that spanned a wide range of issues, from family to the importance of seeing yourself in art to cultural stigma to even a switch up of interviewers. You'll see what I'm referring to later. So, with that in mind, let's get started.
Bobby, thank you so much for joining us on the Not Your Mama's Autism podcast.
Oh, well, you're welcome, Lola. I'm so, it's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So let's start at the beginning. And how would you describe your childhood?
I was born and raised in San Diego, California. My father was in the Navy. My mother, she is a legal citizen from the Philippines. She came here as a student. And they met, fell in love, and 9 months later had me after they were married. My childhood, we were middle class, lower middle class. My mom worked at, she had her own shop where she made clothes. And my father, he was in the Navy, like I said. After that, he retired and worked at the shipyard as an electrician. But my mother, I was always with her at her shop, at her clothing shop. And I remember drawing, I was bored because my mom was making clothes and I was super bored. And so I would be drawing on the boxes where the clothes would be sent off to. So whoever got those boxes had drawings of X-Wings and superheroes, and they were from a little Bobby Rubio. That's pretty much my childhood. We were lower middle class. So we were all right.
So how did you go from doodling, drawing, to a full-blown career in animation and directing and writing?
After high school, I went to CalArts, the California Institute of the Arts in Valencia, California. That was founded by Walt Disney himself. And so originally I wanted to be a comic book artist, and I wanted to go to New York because there was a comic book academy there. But my mother said, no way are you going to New York. You're going to stay in California. And the only thing that interested me was CalArts. And when I went to CalArts, I switched from being a comic book guy to an animation guy. I loved animation. After I graduated from CalArts in 94, I got picked up by Disney. And my first movie was Pocahontas. And I was a cleanup artist. I started at the bottom. And I worked my way to be an animator on Treasure Planet. And after Treasure Planet, traditional animation was starting to not be the hot thing. What was computer animation by this company called Pixar. And then I was let go of Disney, actually, because I was one of the newer guys. And then I went to Nickelodeon to work on a show called Avatar: The Last Airbender for 2.5 years. And then after Avatar: The Last Airbender, I applied for Pixar. It took me 2 chances to get in. The first time they said no. Second time I got in. My first movie was Up. And then, you know, you can check my IMDb. I've worked on Brave, Monsters University, Cars 2, Inside Out, Incredibles 2, Toy Story 4, and also Float. I got the opportunity to write and direct Float. And so, and that to me has so far been the highlight of my career.
You have this amazing career. You also are married with children. Uh-huh. And oftentimes women get asked this question, but I thought I would ask you.
Okay.
Balancing work and family looks different for everyone, but you being an artist, you being a dad, you being a very busy artist, like what does that look like for you?
I am so blessed that my wife, I have a partner that understands that a lot of my time has to, and my mind is off in the clouds thinking of things, but I try my best to also help out where I can. I will fully admit my wife takes a brunt of handling my son's autism and his classes that he goes to and his IEPs, although I try to be at his IEPs whenever I can. And I am informed of what he is up to. I am very lucky that I have her. If I didn't, I would be lost because I would have to do all these things. But I will be the first to admit that my wife does a bulk of it.
So you mentioned your movie Float, and it was the first to feature a Filipino-American character. How has your heritage influenced you as a man and an artist?
Interesting enough is that I am Filipino. I say myself as a Filipino-American because when I was raised, I wasn't taught how to speak Tagalog, or my native language. My mom made me speak English, and like I understand a little bit, but I say I'm American because like I am influenced by my friends around me. So I had African-American friends. I had Mexican friends. I had Asian friends. And growing up in San Diego, it's a very diverse city. And so I love hip hop. I love tacos. I love comic books. And all of these are American influences. And I definitely have some Filipino too in there as well. I mean, our food and our music. But like I say, I feel myself as a mix of all that. And how does that affect my art? I mean, I look at my, for instance, Float. I wanted Float to be a very diverse cast. I mean, if once he goes into the park, I wanted you to see African Americans. I wanted you to see Latinos. I wanted you to see Caucasians as well, because that's what my world looks like. I live in Oakland, and that's what it looks like. I didn't want to make it just look like, I don't know, an episode of Friends or The Office where it's mainly white people. So that's why I'd like to think my short is very diverse.
I could definitely relate to you because my parents are both from Nigeria.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, but I was born and raised here. So I definitely kind of have a foot in both worlds. So I could relate for sure.
Right, because can you speak Nigerian?
It's Yoruba, and I can understand it, but I have such a strong American accent that my cousins and parents and aunts and uncles make fun of me. I don't know if you've had that.
Same here. Do you get this too? Like, you get, like, you're not a real Nigerian?
Oh, all the time. In fact, when I was in law school, I would hang out with other African students, but they were born there and I wasn't. They actually used to call me counterfeit.
Oh, man.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, man. I get that too. So it's a weird, we straddle this weird line. They're like, we're not quite one or the other. So that's why that question was interesting to me.
Yeah. I just wanted to see how universal our backgrounds work. So I wanted to talk to you about when I was doing research for this interview, I came across an article in Variety that was really interesting that talked about how, well, you can tell me, you can confirm, because, you know, who knows? But according to media reports, the initial concept of Float, the father and son were white.
That's correct.
Okay. You later changed it to reflect more of you as a Filipino American.
Could you talk to me about that process, that transformation from going from the originally conceptualized characters to how they came to be that final product?
Well, I think it's because raised in America, I didn't see any Filipinos on TV. I assumed that that's what Pixar wanted, like that the lead character should be white. So when I drew the storyboards and when I drew it initially, they were white. And then one of my story managers, Jillian Ebert, she pulled me aside and she was like, "Hey, Bobby, why are these characters white? I know it's based off of you and your son. Why are they white?" And I was like, "Well, that's what you want, right? Isn't that what Pixar wants?" And she's like, "No, well, here, Bobby." She said this. This is the thing that changed my mind. She's like, "What is your son going to feel about when he looks up at the screen and he sees a white character playing him?" And that hit me. Because before I was like, whatever, they're white. It's, you know, I don't care. And then when she brought up my son, then that took a whole new meaning. I didn't want my son to think I was embarrassed of him. I didn't want him to think that he was not worthy to be, or his nationality, his race was not worthy enough to be on a Pixar screen. So from that point on, the characters became Filipino-American. And I attribute that to Pixar for allowing me to do so. That was the transformation right there, because she brought up my son and I was like, "No, we're not having this. He's going to be Filipino American."
Tell us a little bit about Alex, his personality. Tell us a little bit more about him.
Okay. Alex, he's quirky. He's shy. He's got a sense of humor. He likes to swing on swings, just like on the short. In fact, like, you can't take him off the swing. He'll be there for 20 minutes if you could, 30 minutes if you left them there. He likes just that motion feeling. To me, he feels like a teenager because he's very opinionated, and some things are like, he's too cool for school. If he was a teenager, that would have been fine, because I'll be like, "Alex, what do you think?" Like, for instance, "Alex, what do you think about my short?" And he's like, "That's all right, Dad." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." I mean, you know, like, so he has that kind of vibe. Like, he's pretty chill. He's not, but like, he's funny in that way. Like, he'll be curt with his answers, and sometimes it comes across funny. But I love him very much, and he's a really cool guy. Interesting enough, there's a difference between reality and what you saw in the short. In the short, the father comes to accept and love his son like in 5 minutes. In reality, it took me years. That scene when the father looks at his son and there is a twinkle in his eye, that is much different from my reality. Because my reality, when I saw my son doing something like stimming, for an example, when I saw my son to first stimming, I thought that was weird, because I'm not used to that. I've never seen it before. But we couldn't have the father like that. If he's going to change in 5 minutes, story-wise, he has to like his son and his gifts from the beginning. And it's because of the judgment of society and other people that he feels like he needs to protect his son. That's the short version of Dad, is that he wholeheartedly loves his son from the very beginning. But it's just society made him switch off and become protective of his son. I was different because I didn't accept it right away. It took me years. My producer actually pitched it. She's like, "No, this guy has to like it from the beginning." And in order for us, otherwise it's going to be a 2-hour movie, Bobby. So that's why it's a little bit different, but we still reached the end where we both accept our son the way they are.
So in real life, mm-hmm. how did you come to understand and overcome that initial, that initial inner conflict, I guess?
Right.
How did you overcome that?
I think all parents of children on the spectrum or of special needs parents need to go through a sense of grieving of like, okay, this is not my life anymore. I got to go here now. I got a new normal. And I have to grieve the old thoughts of a normal life. My wife went like that. She was like, okay, let's go. Let's get to business now. Her time of grieving was like really short. Mine took years. You know, I went through all the steps. You know, I forget what the steps are, but, you know, I think some of it is denial. There's pleading with God, pleading like, God, please change, let them be normal. And then
whatever normal means,
normal means. And then eventually you come to acceptance. And it took me years. I think what it was, time heals. And also I saw that my son was progressing and he was learning. And I started to like let go, like, oh, okay, he's going to be all right. And also, I also did get therapeutic help. So I did see a counselor, and that was because my wife told me to. She's like, you really need help. And I think it's because I held it so in. I kept, one of the things what my therapist said was I was future casting. I was always future casting. And what that was, I was like, well, in the future, Alex is going to be like this. And then Alex, because of that, Alex is also going to be like this. And this is going to happen to Alex. And my therapist is like, that's future casting. You can't predict anything, Bobby. You don't know. And so it took me a while before I stopped doing that. But I just believe all those things, the therapy, Alex getting better, and time helped heal myself.
I understand that this movie has almost no spoken word except one powerful sentence.
Mm-hmm.
For those people who haven't watched it, I won't give that away.
Okay.
Why was this decision made?
To hit the audience really hard and make it super raw as possible. I mean, I'm pretty sure you weren't expecting that from a Pixar movie.
It's true.
And so
that is true.
I do know that people wanted more dialogue at the end, like they wanted an apology. But I felt that, I think when you see the short, you'll see that the dad actually does apologize through his actions and his words. And not words, but the way he acts with his kid. I was told that in our special needs community, there are some people that cannot communicate through words, and it is through sheer actions. And so they were telling me Bobby was perfect because some people can't talk, and you got to do it through your emotions and how you, through their eyes and how you relate with your child. And so to me, that felt like it redeemed it. I mean, if this was a long movie, of course he would have pulled him aside and said something. But since this is a 5.5-minute short, I wanted one line of dialogue so it could punch you in the gut and it makes you think, and it makes that scene even more raw and real, at least to me.
Well, what you intended definitely hit us that way. I call it the tearjerker of a series of tearjerkers along the way for such a short film. It just hit so many points in such a short amount of time.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and also, if you notice, the dad goes through the whole journey of coming to acceptance, everything that I told you about grieving. Like, he does at the beginning not accept it. He's like, he's in denial. He's still in the denial phase. Oh, wait, what's this? And then eventually, I mean, there's anger. That's that one point that we're talking about. And then there's acceptance at the end of the short. And then there's joy at the end. So, spoiler alert. But the dad does go through that whole process in a span of 5.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So, as I've mentioned to you before, I have two autistic kids, a boy and a girl. So my husband specifically wanted me to ask you this question, especially based on what you just said as a dad.
Okay.
So as a father, if you did ever struggle with wanting your son to conform and felt guilt as a result, how did you get over that?
How did I get over that? I guess by looking deep within myself, knowing that I am human and I'm not perfect. And the fact that I'm even thinking that I'm guilty of it, I mean, that's a sign of that I have heart and I love my son. I try to forgive myself because I know I'm human. I'm not perfect. And the funny thing is, my sons, both Alex and my older son, Harrison, and the youngest is Will. Will said, I don't know why people are like upset with the dad yelling at Alex. I mean, you yell at us all the time.
So, like, what's
the big deal? And I'm all like, so I'm not, but granted, I mean, I want to the audience know I don't yell at them all the time, but I do yell at them though. So, I mean, what dad doesn't? I love my kids, and yeah, I think that's the answer, is I forgive myself because I know I'm human.
That is fair. Our family motto is one day at a time, and I think you can relate.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about when you put something out into the world and you may want someone to feel a certain way, but they interpret it totally differently than what you originally thought maybe the audience would interpret it? How does that make you feel?
Huh. I was given, interesting enough, I was given the advice to never read the comments because, especially in the beginning, like, because you're going to find people that don't agree with you, like you were just saying. But, you know, we're all human, like I said. So I have read some of them. And the ones that don't agree and don't get it, I understand that you have an opinion and you can keep your opinion. Luckily for me, when I read the rest of the comments, most of them understand of what I'm saying. And so I hold on to the positives. And all the negatives, I kind of let that wash away. And I think maybe that's the special needs parent in me, that I'm like, okay, everything can't be perfect. I'll just let that wash away and move on and celebrate the positives. That's what I do.
Our podcast also touches upon the reason why I asked you about being Filipino-American and is it also touches upon the intersection of culture and neurodiversity. Have you had any challenges relating to being in your culture, like maybe people not understanding? Because we had those issues in the Nigerian community at first, like, what is this autism thing? Did you have any similar issues?
Yes. And I think, you know, I think in the Filipino community, it's taboo. We don't talk about it. We just really don't talk about it. And it's really unfortunate. And that's why I want this short to be out there so we can have this discussion. I want to smash the stigma. I don't want you to just be quiet and let it be. I want to talk about it. I want our kids to interact with other people and be invited and included. But I also think it's because autism, I mean, when I was a kid, there was nothing, nobody. I didn't know anybody with autism. And so I guess there is the part of me that can relate to my community. Like, yeah, it was never around, but now it's so prevalent. And now you have to deal with it. But it's scary because when anything new is scary. And I understand that. The only way to like make it a new normal and is to talk about it and like and make it so it's not strange and different. Make it so it's like autism is like in your life and you get it, and eventually it'll just be like, oh yeah, it's Alex has autism. So what? It's no big deal. Rather than not, it being taboo. And yes, it's definitely in the Filipino community. I think it's in all communities. Have that in my experience talking to a bunch of other people. It's just because autism's so new and we're all trying to just figure it out right now.
It was at this point that my son, Ella, wanted to ask Bobby a couple of questions of his own. And Bobby kindly obliged.
Hey, fella, how's it going?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
So my first question for you is, why did you make the baby float instead of something else? Why did you choose that?
Because I wanted him to have a very cool superpower. And I wanted him to be different from the other children. So the thing is, visually, when you do a cartoon, you want people to understand that he's different. And the way you could do that right away is by having a superpower and he floats and the other kids can't. So that's why I chose floating, because I wanted him to be really cool.
Okay. Also, here's another question.
Okay.
What impact do you hope this has on other people?
I hope that it will make people talk about autism. I hope that it makes people, kids like yourself and my son, Alex, like, I hope that it makes people talk to you guys and become friends with you guys. And I hope that you guys, you fella and my son, Alex, you guys get a ton of friends and like nobody treats you guys differently, and that the world will accept you and my son for the great, awesome kids that you guys are. I'm hoping for that this short helps that happen for the future.
Okay, my last question to you is,
okay,
what impact do you hope this will have on people who tried to keep their differences to themselves?
I hope that this short makes them not want to do that, to celebrate that they're different and they're wonderful the way they are, and that they should share their gifts and talents with the world, and don't ever feel like you have to hide them from anybody. And I hope that's what you get out of this, fella.
That's really what I got out of it, even though I didn't really keep my differences to myself anyway.
All right. Good for you, fella. Great. That's awesome.
You're making me wish I could meet your son.
Well, hopefully after this pandemic, right?
I chime back in because I wanted to ask just one more question.
The tribute at the end of the film, it says that's to your son, Alex, that reads, "To Alex, thank you for making me a better dad, dedicated with love and understanding to all families with children deemed different. With this in mind, how has Alex made you a better father?"
Alex has made me a better father by teaching me patience, by being himself, and forcing me to accepting him to being himself. Like I said previously, how he would swing on the swing set for 20 minutes. Originally, the past me would probably force Alex to get off the swing as soon as possible. The new me knows that's how he is. And And in fact, I will swing right next to him. I've learned how to love moments and not take them for granted. I've also learned is to celebrate your wins. I think that's what makes us a better dad and parent, when we accept our children and we encourage their talents. And I do that as well. I think all of us try to push our kids to be their best.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast platform you are listening to this podcast on. If you're interested in how this podcast came to be, please check out our website at notyourmamasautism.com and follow us on Instagram at notyourmamasautism. In our next episode, we talk to an independent filmmaker who chose to tackle intersectionality through the lens of both race and neurodivergence. She spoke to me about just some of the things she took into consideration when creating her film. See you soon.
Not Your Mama's Autism podcast is hosted and written by my mom, Lola Dada Ali, and it's also co-written and produced by me, Fella Ali. My dad, little sister Alero, and I are all occasional contributors. My dad, Tosin Ali, also helps produce sometimes. Big thanks to my aunt, Olane Williams Ali, who did our graphic design. See you guys soon.